This is a reading from Whispers from Eternity. Demand for the expansion of consciousness in the cosmic sound. Manifest thyself to me, O Father, as the light of reason, as the blaze of wisdom, as the breeze of amity and of self-expanding harmony. Manifest thyself through the song of atoms and electrons whose music vibration encompasses the universe. Teach me to hear thy cosmic voice, which first commanded all vibration to begin, inspiring every pinpoint of creation to sing its own special melody. Oh, let me hear within me thy cosmic voice, so long hidden behind the hubbub of outer creation. Let my magic wand of meditation touch all sounds and melt them into the one cosmic sound of Om. Lo, how it courses over the earth in the sky and far out from earth to reach the stars. Appear to me as Om, 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 thy cosmic song which gives life to and infuses all sounds. Every cell of my body, every nerve, every ripple of my thought now sings with thy great cosmic anthem, Om. Good morning, friends. Again, a joyous new year to all of you. This particular new year, I think, is quite special and cheerful, and we are all looking forward to it very enthusiastically, especially because of the unusual nature of 2020 and the peculiar year this past year was. I, like anybody else, obviously look forward to new beginnings. There's one thing that I remember from past years that I mildly dread as soon as January rolls in on the calendar, which is a visit to the gym. During the month of December, generally the gym parking lots are pretty barren, and you can easily walk in any time. And as soon as January comes, there's almost a shift of energy overnight. You walk into a gym on January 1st or 2nd, and of course for the first few weeks of that month, and it's the only image that comes to my mind is a busy railway station in India. There's just a lot of people. You don't know who they are, why they're there. They just seem to be busy doing their own thing. And it tapers down, and we obviously understand why. New Year is the time of resolutions, and for some reason, for very good reason, oftentimes it happens to be about good health and right eating and exercise and all of those things. So it somehow all concentrates in the gym, and I don't know where else, but that's where it's most apparent to me. And yesterday I was reading on the internet about New Year resolutions and what the year brings, and there were all these statistics and studies done about how long people hold on to their resolutions. And I was looking at this one study that said about 55% of people, they fail in their resolution by January 21st. And then it went on, 60 days, 100 days, and this. And I mean, there's so many studies. And I was reading all of this, and I was thinking to myself, of course, I mean, it's not cynical or anything. It's quite realistic. I've been there. We have all been there. We know there's, of course, this great enthusiasm and excitement for a new beginning. And all energy shifts, and it tapers, and it transforms into something else. And then there's something else after that. But what I was thinking about and meditating on was just this, that, no matter how many times we fail, no matter how many times people falter in the resolution, what is it that brings us back every new year to commit again, to somehow find something within us, that hope, that enthusiasm, that excitement, to take up another resolution, to move forward with that sense of accomplishing a goal, with that sense of believing, that faith, that our potential is bigger than who we are, and no matter what we are struggling with, however endless it seems, it is something we can overcome, that we can move forward through. And that is not a small thing. New Year resolutions are, of course, rather trivial. That's not the point of what I'm talking about here. This hope that we hold on to, this light that drives us, this life that is within us, that is something special. It is a spark of divinity that we are constantly seeking to grow, seeking to expand our consciousness, seeking God, but in all kinds of different ways in our own little universe. There's this Beautiful story from the new path. I was reminded of this story because it came to me when I was preparing for a webinar a few weeks ago. And I've been thinking about that story quite a bit these last few weeks. It's a conversation between Yogananda, Master, and Swamiji, Swami Kriyananda, and it happened somewhere toward the end of Master's life. Master was spending most of his time in 29 Palms, a desert retreat, where he was writing the Gita commentary, and Swami was with him during those days. And one evening, they're sitting outside and they're having this conversation, and out of the blue, Master asks Swamiji, why is it that the earth does not just move away from its orbit and spin off into space? And Swamiji says, sir, it's the gravitational pull of the sun that keeps the earth always going on its orbit. And then Master says, then why is it that the earth is not immediately drawn back to the sun and merge into it? And Swamiji says, sir, but that is the centrifugal force of the earth that keeps it in its orbit. And the conversation just shifts from there. Master does not make any further remarks. And Swami, he says he was quite perplexed in that moment. He was thinking maybe Master just wants to have a lesson in basic astronomy. But then later he realized there was deep teaching in what Master was communicating to him in that simple exchange. He was talking about the sun and the earth, and he was also talking about the soul and God. What sustains this creation, what keeps this universe, what it is. That force that is constantly drawing us, the gravitational pull of God that is asking us, that is making us grow from the inside, constantly making us seek happiness, seek expansion of consciousness. And the other force, the delusion, the darkness that does not comprehend that is pulling us the other way. And these two forces are always acting upon us, and that's how creation is sustained. Now, that's rather macrocosmic, and we understand the concept theoretically, but on a personal level, in our own individual lives, in the trajectory of the soul, it becomes rather personal, because these are not just neutral forces that we are subjected to. These forces are deeply personal because one of them makes us suffer, and the other makes us happy. And from the tiniest of creatures, as Master wrote in his very first book, they're seeking to expand, they're seeking happiness, they're seeking that fulfillment of its own divine potential, and constantly growing and growing and growing. Because we know that potential is ultimate freedom, that absolute unconditional bliss. And yet, the centrifugal force, this force of delusion, this force of darkness, is somehow so powerful that it veils. That's how Maya is described in the Eastern tradition. It's a veil over our eyes. As simple as this concept is, as simple as it is to express this in words, that this force that is drawing us towards the divine is going to bring us greater and greater happiness, and yet we are drawn into the world, we are drawn into the creation because of our own egos, our own individuality, which takes us into darkness. It is so simple to visualize, to theoretically understand, and yet so hard to realize and pierce through because it covers our eyes, it blinds us. And that is the greatest mystery of creation itself. How is it possible that we can understand this concept and yet be caught in this drama? There's a story from the Indian scriptures that Swami used to often quote. It's a story, it's an exchange between the great devotee Narada and the Lord himself, Narayana. And Narada asked the same question to the Lord. Lord, how is it possible? It's so self-evident to me that if I was seeking God, if I was practicing devotion, if I was always constantly in communion with you, I will be in joy. And yet, billions and billions of souls in this creation, they're drawn into delusion. They're constantly drawn into Maya and caught there. How is it even possible? It feels so foolish to be drawn that way. And then the Lord says, you know, let's go for a walk and discuss this. And they keep walking, they keep chatting, and they reach a barren desert. And they see this village with houses just nearby. And the Lord says to Narada, you know, I'm very parched, I'm thirsty for water. Would you mind just knocking on that door and getting me some water? And Narada goes, knocks on that door, and it is opened, as it said, by a beautiful maiden. And his heart immediately leaps out and he's smitten. And she welcomes him, and her parents are at home, and they see that this man is drawn to their daughter, and he seems to be a very noble and pious man. And her father invites Narada to marry his daughter. And they marry, and her father establishes their family. He hands over his business to Narada, and Narada starts running the business. He starts making wealth. They have their first child. They have their second child. They build their own house. And then they have a third child. And all of this goes on for years and years and years. And then one day, the nearby river floods. Quite unexpectedly, there's a lot of rain, and the village is flooded with water. And Narada first runs to save all his possessions, his businesses, his belongings, his house. And all of that is lost. He realizes there's no, it's futile trying to protect all this from the flood. And then he grabs on to his three children. He takes the second and the third child by hand, and the first child is sitting on his shoulders. And now the water levels are rising. And his wife is also trying to hold on to herself and save the family. And gradually the water level is rising and rising. And the second child, second and third child, who were unable to hold on, they're so exhausted by all of this, they lose their grip and they're drawn by the flood. And watching this immediately, his wife also loses her hope to live, and she's also drawn into the flood. And Narada becomes weak in his knees, and he's not able to hold on to the child on his back either. And that child is also lost in the flood, and Narada is completely heartbroken, and he's just crying and weeping, and he himself loses all strength and any intention or desire to live, and he just passes out. And when he wakes up, the water has receded and he's lying on the sand, and it looks like there's just sand everywhere. And then he hears the voice of the Lord, and he sees Narayana approaching. And even at this point, Narada doesn't realize what happened, and of course we all know from the story, Narayana asks Narada, "Oh, where is the water that I asked you for?" Now, that story is so heart-wrenching and also so beautiful and simple, in the sense that all of that Narada was experiencing, all of that seeking, all of that longing that he went to fulfill, it was real and yet not. And there is this quality to this world, the way we move through it. We are engaged, we have our lives, we have our jobs, we have our activities, our relationships, and everything that we do here that seems so real, and yet they're not. Because we were sent here by God to seek that water, to seek that water of bliss, to somehow express ourselves and to feel that joy in creation, and we get caught. And it is not our fault. It is not the primal sin that actually gets us caught. It is the design of creation, as this reading explains, as the Bhagavad Gita tells us over and over again, and as Master explained through that simple conversation. Because there is this conscious force. There are these two forces that are always acting upon us. And we are in the middle of both of them at all times. And we do get lost. And no matter how creation is sustained, for us, our source of happiness, our own bliss, comes from tuning into one side of this creation, by tuning into that gravitational pull of God, to go deep within, to find that place, to constantly keep seeking, not outwardly, but inside, to find that space inside where we can find that call for bliss, that call for deep communion with the divine. And this mystery of Maya is so confusing. It is so simple to understand what we are seeking, and yet we forget, we get busy. I used to work with Todd at East West. I'm looking at him because he's right here playing music with us. And I think we might have been together on the front desk on this particular day. And there was this thing, I don't even remember what it looked like. There were these jade charms that East West used to carry. East West is a bookstore, for those of you who don't know, that's in Mountain View. It's a metaphysical bookstore that is run by Ananda, with all kinds of beautiful things, and a lot of spiritual seekers are drawn there. And these were Chinese jade charms. They were made of jade stone, I think. They were green in color, and they had a red thread or something tied to them. They were dogs and dragons or something like that. And each one of them came with a theme or a word. I think it's like a good luck charm or something like that. And there were things like good health and happiness and prosperity, things that you would like want to keep with yourself or hang in your house or something like that. And I was not particularly drawn to them. It was just a knickknack. And it was quite a popular product, though. A lot of people were buying them. And I remember one lady, she was looking at all of these good luck charms, these jade charms, and she was drawn first to the one that said happiness. And I thought, oh yeah, and I could see that she was visually drawn to it. It just looked good for her. And then she wanted to buy it. And then she rotates that display thing and she sees there's something called good luck. And then she keeps the happy, oh, that's what I need. And then she picks good luck. And then she bought that. I was just thinking to myself, really? Do we need happiness? I was not thinking about her. I was not criticizing her. But it sort of set me on a philosophical rambling right in the middle of it. Do we need good luck more than we need happiness? And I was just sort of reminiscing like that. And soon, in a few days, I realized actually all the other charms were selling a lot more than happiness was. And it was so telling of what we are studying in this reading today, because all of that is that confusion. Now, why do I need good luck and good health and prosperity? Not that any of these things are bad. Of course, these are all wonderful things and things that are worth seeking in this world. But if we could have happiness, would we still want good luck? Would we still want health and prosperity and all these other things? Interestingly, the answer oftentimes is yes. And that's because of that veil. Because the darkness, as the reading says, cannot comprehend. We know, theoretically, that the reason why we are seeking good luck, the reason why we are seeking health and prosperity is so that we can find that joy, we can be happy, and yet, somehow we are convinced that it is going to come through this good luck, going to come through this next house, this relationship, this car, this job, by this person treating me that way, or this happening and that not happening. And that's where we get busy. We get busy all the time. Running around, seeking every single thing, collecting and gathering them, all the things that we are convinced are going to give us that happiness. All this while, this other force, this other pull of the divine is telling us, I can give you that happiness. It is already there. The goal is yours if you would have it. But the Maya, that veil, convinces us that we have to seek it through all these other things. There's this poem of Swami Shankara, Adi Shankara, or Swami Shankara as Master calls him. It's a long poem, and these verses that I think Master used to quote, or at least Swami used to quote quite a bit, which is quite touching. It's a very simple verse where Shankara says, childhood is busy with toys, youth is busy with sexual pursuits, and middle age is busy seeking wealth. Old age is busy with regrets and illnesses, but alas, who is busy with God? It's almost poignant to think about that every time I read that verse. Oh my gosh, what am I doing? What should I be doing? And yet, we get caught again and again. It's not that I'm reading that verse just for the first time. I've read it many times and perhaps in many other incarnations before as well. And yet we are overcome. And yet we are overcome by that veil, by that ignorance that cannot perceive that darkness. That cannot perceive that light. And we keep running around all the time. But it's not all bad news, because there's good news. The good news is that this gravitational pull, this pull of the divine is also constantly within us. And it's not out there. It's deep within us. We hear about the word in this reading, and Yogananda in his commentary, he makes a big point about that. The word is not the Bible, the Christian Bible. Of course, the Christian Bible is a great scripture. That's where we read that reading from. But there was no written scripture before there was creation. It's absurd to think that there would have been, because all scripture and understanding and this expression of wisdom came much later. The word that we are talking about is that vibration of spirit, that first expression of the divine that set all of this into motion. And of course, in the Indian tradition, we call it the Om vibration, that first vibration of spirit, when all of it began. Om is not just a word that we chant. It's not just that sound that we express vocally. This vibration cannot be expressed through creation. It can only be inferred. Om is that cosmic vibration that we have to feel within our own spine, within, in the experience of deep meditation. And in the Gita, Krishna gives, in the same chapter, very close to the verse that we just read, Krishna gives this detailed explanation to Arjuna of what this whole creation is. He says very clearly to Arjuna, in no confusing terms, "Oh Arjuna, I created all of this, and there are two aspects of my creation. One is this outer creation, where you're drawn through the senses, through the elements and the mind and the ego. And the other, Arjuna, is the higher aspect of my creation, the supreme cosmic vibration. And that, will lead you away from all suffering. This outer creation is going to take you on this endless cycle of reincarnation. And both of these are part of my design. And that's the beauty of all of this. It's mysterious because both of these were created by God. Because if they didn't exist, like Master explained, what would be here? If there was no pull of the divine, if there was only outer expression, then we would just be tumbling into darkness. And in no time, in a fraction of a second, this entire creation would be lost in absolute darkness. And if there was no centrifugal force, if there was no individual pull of that delusion, of that ego, we would all merge back into the divine and there'll be nothing to express. So this whole picture that we are studying in this reading is part of what we call Leela or the divine play, how creation works. But that's not as relevant to us as individual souls, because that's, you know, that's good to understand as God's design. But for us, what matters is only one of these pulls, that pull that draws us closer to Him. We do not have to respect that centrifugal force or the force of delusion or honor it as God's creation. What we need to honor is the call of the divine, because that's what takes us closer in greater attunement, not just with God, but with our own soul, the design for why and how we were made, why we were sent by the Lord to seek that water, and then we forgot. We forgot somewhere along the way. And this Om vibration is constantly calling. It's God's call within us. In the path of Kriya Yoga, if you're somebody who practices or familiar with that, we practice something called the Om technique. This is not a setting where I can talk more about it or share it. If you're interested, you can certainly contact us or contact any Ananda center near you. But what it is, it's a meditation technique where we deeply tune in, we turn our energy away from the senses, we pull back and we listen. And we start listening more and more intently. It is not prayer, it is not contemplation, it is not watching your thoughts. It is listening with every cell of your being for that whisper from the divine. The Master calls his book of prayer demands whispers from eternity. We talk of Om as the thundering sound from the clouds, but that's not what the voice of God is. Voice of God is a whisper. It's whispering, and we can only hear, again, like Master says in that whisper that I just read, we can hear that only when we are able to pull away, tune out the hub of outer creation. That's how Master calls it. And in Swamiji's Gita commentary, he goes on to explain that even any outward experience, even the most uplifting and beautiful experiences that we can have in this world, even the enjoyment of a beautiful sunset or even a devotional experience, they're all symbols. They are not an experience of the divine. And Swami says, only if that outer experience, if that can be translated into inner communion, is that an experience of the divine. That is the only experience that takes us closer to God. Because, not because there's anything wrong or bad with this creation or the outer world, but it is by design not meant to produce happiness. It is not designed to take us closer to our own goal. What will take us closer to our own goal is that inner life, that deep inner communion. Yoganandaji says beautifully in one of his writings, you know, God or spirit can only be inferred on this material plane. He can be felt in the astral plane or on the level of energy, and God can be intuitively known on the causal plane, because there is this constant awareness that we are part of spirit. So on this material plane, the darkness cannot comprehend the light, because the darkness does not have the faculty. The spirit cannot express in the material plane. We only have to infer it. We have to infer it through all the beauty, through beautiful music, through pictures on the altar. But remember, all these are symbols. All this has to be pulled back in into listening to that sound of Om. And it doesn't matter the mechanics of any technique. All that it is listening. To still ourselves and to listen in deep meditation, no matter what style or kind of meditation you practice, I encourage you to try that. And even if you don't hear any sounds, Om, I don't know if I mentioned it, is an actual sound, is an actual vibration that you perceive, that you hear. If we are able to still ourselves, and anybody who has practiced these techniques can tell you, it is a very real and experience that one can have in meditation. But it doesn't quite matter whether or not you hear any sounds in meditation or what experience you have or don't have, because the silence that you experience in meditation, the silence of stillness in itself is the voice of God. And even if we can hear that, even if we can listen intently to that silence, that takes us closer. That is that pathway. That is the doorway that the Spirit has created for that gravitational pull to express. That inner life that we can nurture by that call of the divine, because that force, that sound, that vibration, when we are able to tune in, it keeps drawing us in constantly back into our own source. And that will draw us closer. That makes that gravitational pull of the sun all the more stronger in our own lives, in our own daily activities. And in this reading that Shanti just read from the rays, I only noticed this today morning as I was reading that again, where Swamiji says, he describes this incident from the autobiography of a yogi, of master asking in deep meditation, what is behind the darkness of closed eyelids? And this answer comes, first he sees these saints and yogis, and he's drawn to them, and he's drawn to that vibration, he wants to be like them. And gradually, they all go away. That light that he sees, all the images, all the yogis and the saints that he sees, they all merge back into that one light, and he has an experience of God himself. And Swami says, I think his exact words are, wiser we if we can meditate on that experience and salvage even a breath of inspiration. Now that, that story from the autobiography is describing is that pathway back to merge with our own source, is that pathway back to God, to meditate behind the on the darkness of closed eyelids, and to ask, to seek, to focus, to listen. And whether or not we see the light, whether or not we hear any sound, we know it. That light is right behind the darkness of closed eyelids. That sound is right behind the silence. You know, one of my favorite chants of Master, which I love chanting a lot in my personal practice, it's probably the only chant I do, is this chant called Do Not Dry the Ocean of My Love. And there's a line in this chant, and even the melody and the notes are so beautiful on that line, where Master says, Thee I find behind the fringe of my mind. And every time I sing that, I think to myself, wow, my mind seems endless. I don't know where its fringe is and where I'm going to find God. And as endless as it seems, there is a fringe, there is a limit to all of this. As endless, even if it takes years, even if it takes a very, very long time, if we keep listening to that silence, if we keep looking intently into the darkness behind closed eyelids, that light will reveal itself. And this new year, I'm going to welcome all of us, including myself, to be drawn into that, to focus more and more into listening, to being still, to draw ourselves closer. There's this, again, I'm thinking of this poem by Ramana Maharishi that I learned when I was a very, very small boy. It's a long poem, but one of the lines in that poem, I remember even as a child, I must have been 6 or 7 years old, where Ramana Maharishi says he's singing to God. Ramana Maharishi, for those of you who don't know, was a great saint who lived in India. He was almost a contemporary of Master. He lived around the same time. Master met him in South India when he visited India in 1936. In this poem, he says, be like that magnet and I'm the piece of iron. You be the magnet and keep drawing me closer and closer toward you until I am fully magnetized. And that is what we are seeking. We are seeking it through the saints, and we are seeking it through God, and we are seeking it through the inner experience of cosmic vibration. And that is the magnet. And it is so hard to even explain in words if we have not had that taste in meditation, because whatever experience that is, even if it is not what it's supposed to be, even if it's not the greatest vision or truly super conscious in any way, even if we have the slightest taste of it, like Swami says, even a breath of that inspiration, we will know from experience that it has the power to draw us closer. It has the power to kindle that desire within us for that inner life, for that stillness, for the taste of calming our nerves, for drawing our energy in and not always be drawn out seeking it outside. So, this new year, let's all make that commitment. And I invite you to join all of us too. It's fun to do it together. This last year has been a very interesting one, of course. And one of the beautiful things of this past year has been the bringing together of all of us, whoever is watching now in time, real time, or perhaps later, who were not necessarily geographically together. We have all been brought together by this weird Dwapara pandemic that we are living through. You know, somehow all spatial boundaries of space have disappeared, and it feels like we are all together in this. So let's do this together. As much as this is an inner experience, as much as we are trying to go inside, we need each other in this process. We need the support of community. We need the support of other truth seekers, because that satsang is also an essential ingredient in being able to act upon that gravitational pull. So blessings for a joyous new year again to all of you. And we hope to be in touch and share with you many, many wonderful programs. And I hope you can continue joining us the rest of this year for all the wonderful things that we have ahead of us. God bless you.
Starting again, Yogananda, our guru, wrote a song to try to describe some of these things that Sai Ganesh has just been beautifully telling us about, how we can listen behind the silence for the sounds that draw us within. And this song called the Om Song helps us identify and relate to those experiences that can be heard. Whence Om, this soundless roar doth come, when drowseth matter dreary drum, on shores of bliss Om a booming breaks, all earth, all heaven, all body shakes, the bumblebee now hums along. Baby Om doth softly sing his song. From Krishna's flute the call is sweet. 'Tis time the watery god to meet. Cords bound to flesh are broken all. Vibrations burst and meteors fall. The hustling heart, the boasting breath, no more shall cause the yogi's death. The god of fire with fervor sings, Om, Om, his joyous harp now rings. Prana god with power sounds, the wondrous bells, the soul resounds. All nature lies in darkness soft. The star divine is seen aloft. Subconscious dreams have gone to bed. 'Tis then that one doth hear Om's tread. Oh, upward climb the living tree. Hark to the cosmic symphony. From Om, the soundless roar. From Om, the call for light or dark to roam. Oh, Om, the music of the spheres. From Om, the mist of nature's tears. All things of earth and heaven declare. Om, Om, resounding everywhere. Om, the music of the spheres. From Om, the mist of nature's tears. All things of earth and heaven declare. Om, Om, resounding everywhere. Mm-hmm.
to our musicians, we don't get to hear that song or feel that vibration enough. So it was important to do it twice today, I thought, and I deeply appreciate it. But about this Recharge Health program that's being put on, it's a global event. There are, James mentioned Dr. Dean Ornish, but many of the big names in healthcare who revolutionized healthcare, who took it from simply body to body, mind, and soul, which is something Dean Ornish did. There are about three or four other physicians, world-renowned people, several world-renowned physicists who helped the whole world understand that matter is only energy. And then many, many people in areas of healthcare, naturopathic medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, astrology, it just really encompasses not just how to be healthier, definitely, but how to expand our consciousness into health and our health into our consciousness. It's an extraordinary program. So please, as James said, you can go to the Ananda Palo Alto site and find it, or you can email Lakshmi. She can send you a link. They've put an enormous amount of energy in. It's just a great program with great speakers, the best of medicine and the best of the spiritual world, with Nayaswamis Jyotish, Devi, Dhyana, Shivani, Bharat. I could just go on and on. The best of the best. So see if you can tune in and join it.